Yeah, Mary and Martha, I found a challenging passage because it's one of those that I always went through and you get an understanding and then you think, but I'm not sure about what that would mean if that was true. So it's a good one to have to preach because it makes you think about it. But before I go into that, I want to introduce some special people to you, people that are special to me. We didn't do a table talk discussion today. You can let me know if you find that helpful sometimes or not. If I was going to do it, the question I had for you today was, tell people about a Christian who is special for you and why. Okay, and you might want to do that during the week and so on, but think of a Christian who you think of as special and one thing about them as to why. It's a good exercise to do and to think through. That would have been table talk, but special people I want to introduce to you today. You don't get to see them very often. My daughter Hannah on the left and my daughter Emma on the right. So both our kids are adopted, and so are you, if you know the Lord and you're in his family. That question, by the way, about a Christian that impresses you doesn't just have to be for Christians to answer. Okay, if you've just come to church for the first time, it's a good one to share. What has impressed you about a Christian? The lady in the middle here is their nanny. And I'm actually into my second week of being dad at home without mum. We go to the next picture. This is Julie, my wife, with her mum. And she's been down in Bournemouth for the last 2 weeks because basically we knew that Julie's mum was at the end of her life. And she's been caring for her. And on Wednesday, she went to be with the Lord, went to be in heaven. And that was, quite a blessing the way it happened and the fact that Julie and her sister were able to be there. I've given you those pictures because it's good for us to know about each other and our family, so I'm welcoming them there so that you know them. But also, Julie's mum, Jean, is a good example to me of both a Mary and a Martha. And that gives me some of the dilemma in this passage, okay? If you went and visited Jean's house, she has, by the way, more grandchildren than I can count. And because she's one of, I think, seven sisters and had five kids and then ended up remarried to somebody with another five kids. So you can imagine all the people that are there. And yet she will always be sending birthday cards to all of them, inviting them for meals, making cakes, cooking for people. If you go around there and take your jumper off, if you're not careful, it's in the washing machine before you can find it again. So she was one of those energy people doing things all of the time. And interestingly, she was never rich. Spent most of her life in a council house. Didn't drive. Never went abroad. And many of the measures of success that we have for other people, she didn't have. But she is a nanny and a special friend to loads of people, an adopted nanny to even more, because of the way she treasured relationships with people. And that's what lasts as she goes. Mary, Martha. How do we work those two together? We're going to look through the passage, but maybe a little video I have will show it's not just a sexist thing or an ageist thing. Here's a young boy who maybe we could relate to one of these two. So have a look through this video and see how you relate it to
okay.
the passage.
Okay, it's turned on. We're good. Okay, this is for Mrs. Stevens' class. Our assignment is to document how we spend the day after school. And sometimes I just like to videotape some of my prayers, and here is some of my prayers, so here it goes. Lord, I thank you for my friends at school, and my teachers, and all that you have given me, and stupid thing. Oh, I forgot about you. Maybe I'll just finish this one level. In this room before I can start praying again. Okay. Woo! Let's get back to praying. My room's clean. I can focus now. Lord, I just thank you for my friends at school. I thank you for my teachers, and I just want you to help me be focused and always do my homework. I forgot to do my homework. Let's just do that real quick. I forgot to turn off the camera. Oh well, let's just get back to praying. Lord, I thank you for... Oh yeah, it's Dad! Hi, Dad. I'll just tell her, okay? Love you. Bye. Okay? Okay? Okay! Mom! Dad says he's gonna be late for dinner! Lord, I just thank you for my family. Melanie, turn off your stupid music! I'm trying to pray! Turn it off! God, I have a new prayer. Please help my sister to be a better person. Please!
Okay, we'll try and look at that, but we need to go back to the passage. So thank you, Eric, for reading that to us at the beginning. We're going to do it again, but I need four people to help me. So can I have some people to come and help me with that? Four people to come and help me. Okay, I got one. Great. You've just become Jesus, by the way. Nobody can go higher than that now. Three other people. Quick, quick. Okay, come on up. Come, come. And one more who's actually going to do the reading. Great. Okay. So if you can take yourself to a mic and grab the Bible from there. Thanks. So our passage is Luke 10. Verses 38 to 42. And how should we do this? I'd like you to be Mary, and you're going to be Martha. So what we're going to do is, as we go through the reading, and this makes us think, okay, I'd like you to act the reading. So when you hear about Mary, you need to do what Mary's doing. Okay, I'll give you a clue. Your bit is easy. Okay? Yes, because you think about Mary and what Mary's doing. So you get to sit down. And you need to think about Martha and what she's doing and try and show us what she's doing and what she's feeling by your actions, which I think you're going to be really good at. Okay. So... let's have our reading nice and slowly, please.
As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home.
Okay.
Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he taught.
You sit down there.
But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken from her.
Brilliant. Thank you. Let's give a round of applause. Okay, we can go. We'll have to get the podcast videoed next so that people can see what was going on then. Sometimes having to act something out helps us think through what's actually going on and what the emotions are. So, Okay, we're going to fly through a little bit of background of what's going on here. So Bethany is just outside of Jerusalem. It's about 2.9 kilometers outside of Jerusalem. So Jesus is going through there as he visits, and he actually goes back to this house a number of times. It's probably from Bethany that he sets off on the palm tree march into Jerusalem. So it's just outside of Jerusalem. And Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Now, we didn't hear that name in here, but as soon as I mention that name, you're probably thinking, oh, yes, there's those other Bible stories. So you've got the three of them here as brothers and sisters. Lazarus is the one who you hear about who gets sick, and they plead for Jesus to come and to pray to heal him, and Jesus doesn't come, and Lazarus dies. And then Jesus comes, and actually we read about Lazarus coming back to life, being raised by Jesus' prayer. We can see all that emotion going on in this family, the closeness that there is between them. But actually, in other ways, some things might surprise us, like this is referred to as being Martha's house. And we think of it as a very male-dominant culture, but here is a lady who is running the house and making the moves and doing the hospitality in lots of areas. So it's an unusual family, at least in our imagination. And Jesus doesn't kind of stand back from that. He embraces that. He's involved in there. So if you ever feel pushed back as a lady in different situations, don't be. You see Jesus embracing here and commending them for what they do. The other thing to note in here is a cultural point. Very often when you did hospitality, where the ladies were and where the men were would be separate. And actually the ladies would work hard to make the food first for all the men. And I've been in cultures where this happens, and the men would feast, and then the ladies get to eat what's left afterwards separately. The role of sitting at the feet of someone was a special place. It's a term that's used to refer to the situation where you've made somebody almost like your guru. You've made them, he's going to be my teacher, and you get an invitation to sit at the feet of, to be one of those who is going to be discipled, who is going to be nurtured as they grow by that leader or teacher. So when Mary sits as invited to sit at the feet of Jesus, you see someone who is coming into a place that, again, is normally for men. And yet Jesus welcomes her into that place of learning and that place where he's going to nurture her in her growth as a disciple. So there's a few things from the background that maybe give us some extra bits of information as we look at this passage. But I want to look at it under a title of intimacy and distractions. I don't believe activity was the problem in this passage. And that's where I struggled many times when I looked at this, because somehow Martha running around doing everything seems to be condemned, even though things needed to be done. And Mary doing nothing seems to be commended. And I struggled with what's going on here. I don't believe activity was a problem. So what was the problem? I think we need to nurture our key relationships. And sometimes our activity is at the expense of those key relationships. Okay? I'm in the house by myself at the moment with no Julie, and suddenly there's food to cook and there's clothes to wash and things to clean. And do you expect me to speak to my kids and be nice to them when I'm having to try and work out all of those things? The activity can become at the expense of the relationship, even though I'm doing it for you. Sometimes we forget the relationship when we're running around just with our head on of what we need to do. And I think that's part of what was going on in this situation. Martha had invited Jesus in, And then she was desperate to get all the activity done and not sitting still. I have a little bit of an issue with that. I do not like eating until I've finished my immediate to-do list. And sometimes the rest of my family just give up and want to eat before I'm ready to. Whereas to me, I have to get to the end of a chapter before I'm ready to pause and actually stop and enjoy my food. And I think some of this is what was going on with Martha. She was just thinking, I just need to get through all of this stuff before I'm ready to pause. But she could be missing the opportunity. We need to nurture our key relationships. There's nothing like somebody dying. And I've had a brother-in-law die 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and now a mother-in-law. There's nothing like people dying for you to realize how much time you have or haven't put into that relationship. We need to nurture our key relationships. How do we do that? I think we do that by creating a culture of intimacy, not distraction. A culture of intimacy, not distraction. And that's very relevant for the world we live in now, okay? I can find that one of the best places to talk to my kids is when I'm taking them somewhere and they're in the car beside me. That seems to be, they're trapped. They can't get out. You can try and have a conversation in that situation. And yet, thanks to mobile phones, sometimes I can't. Because the whole time I'm trying to talk to them, they're off doing something somewhere else. And it becomes a little bit like the boy in the video, where, oh yeah, I'm going to pray. I'm going to take my time now with God. And then he keeps thinking of everything else he's going to be doing and running around. And he misses the intimacy. I think I've said this before, but we live supposedly in a very connected world. But our relationships are becoming shallower and shallower. We need to create intimacy in our relationships. There are an awful lot of people struggling. We've talked about Christians Against Poverty, struggling with debt. People who struggle when they've lost their house and they're away from family and maybe end up on the street. Very often, one of the big issues is loss of relationships. And actually, it's not just an issue for people we might think of as out there. I challenge you, it's an issue for you as well. That you're living with shallow relationships. And I want you to find ways. And I've said a culture, because that's a way of living. It's a constancy. But intimacy with your relationships. And then you need to do everything out of love, not obligation. Again, 2 weeks of trying to do things in the house. I'm just doing this for you. Come on. Sometimes you get fed up with what you have to do for other people and you're not doing it very nicely for them. Another time, and you're feeling dumped on in that and almost resenting needing to do that. And when that happens, you're doing it out of obligation. But we're commanded that we do everything in love. Otherwise, it's worthless. It amounts to nothing unless it's done in love. So all of these serving tasks, all of these Martha tasks, we need to be doing from a place of love, not obligation. And you see the overflow of that because when Martha comes to Jesus, normally when you come to Jesus, it's, you know, please help me or please show me what to do. And what does Martha do? She arrives in front of Jesus and says, come on, you need to tell Mary to help me. Not Jesus, please help me, or Jesus, please show me what to do. But Jesus, can you sort out that other person who I think's got it wrong? Can you tell them what to do and get them moving? It wasn't coming from a love place. It was coming from somebody who had, at that point, felt obligation and then slipped into judging other people and where they were at and how they were responding. So I want to challenge you to esteem others. And that's why I went back to that table talk point about a Christian you admire and why. Because too often we talk about why we don't admire people. So perhaps we need to turn it around and challenge ourselves that we are actually vocalizing, we're speaking out why we do admire somebody else and esteeming them in what they're doing well and esteeming them to others by what they're doing well. Okay, so some challenges as we close up out of here. Pursue intimate time with Jesus. When you look through chapter 10, actually, Jesus had been sending out the disciples. He'd been calling them to action. He'd been getting them to do things. So that wouldn't sound like he's immediately ready to criticize Martha for her activity. But he does call us to intimacy in our relationships. And next week, we transition into talking about prayer. So you've got the two things together. You've got activity and intimacy. We talked about things that we need to be doing, and we're talking about intimacy through prayer as we go forward, and they're meeting in this chapter. So we need to find intimate time with Jesus, not just like the boy in the video, where we say, I want to pray, and then we're doing loads of other things. But how do we create intimate time with Jesus, like Mary, who took a physical position of saying, I'm at the feet of Jesus. My eyes are fixed on you, the theme we have at the moment. I want to hear from you. I want to feel that connection, that special relationship with you. And my activity is going to come out of that. So pursue intimate time with Jesus. How you do that, I guess we're going to get into as we do prayer and so on in the next couple of weeks. So I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to put the challenge here that we need to pursue that intimate time with Jesus. But to do that, you probably need to improve your intimate time skills. Okay? You've had food with lots of people today. I wonder if I asked you, from your conversation today, please tell me about how two other people in the room are feeling. I wonder how well you could do. In the time you've had together with people today, have you connected? Do you really know where they're at? Do you know how you might pray for them after you left this room? Have you been listening to them? Or has it just been rushed time? We're not very good at having intimate, connected relationships with people. So we maybe need to find ways to practice those skills, to practice listening, to practice taking away something that we can act on to show our love for other people. I actually have in our house something I saw a long time ago that says, let your life speak. So my challenge to you is let your actions be because of your key relationships. Okay, your to-do list can sometimes be just that obligation thing just because somebody else told you you need to do it. But I want to say to you, your activity, your to-do list should come from your key relationships. Easy example, if you're married, if you're living with somebody, if that's your key relationship, how do your actions show that you value that person? Because when that relationship breaks down, it's normally because your actions have stopped showing that you value that key person. That's a really practical where you're living question. But the same is true for your relationship with Jesus. Your intimacy, your connection with him should be what drives your actions that show that you want to please Jesus. Now, nothing you can do, and Phil touched on this, nothing you can do can make God love you more. No amount of hospitality, no amount of hard work, no amount of supposed good deeds will make him love you more because he already loves you perfectly. But if you value that relationship, then I think the way you live will show that that relationship is important to you. When you're feeling, and we all have this, overwhelmed, don't lash out. Yeah, you saw Martha there getting to the point where she was frustrated, and then she starts to lash out at other people's choices. And sometimes we do that at the desperate points. Sometimes we do it in far more subtle ways. When I was, as a teenager, working in an OM, so a mission that was largely for people just out of high school or just out of university, I was in India. There was one guy, also called Phil, who was incredibly gifted and a musician, a good speaker, and he was in demand everywhere, and they wanted to put him on the stage in front of lots of people because of his gifting and everything that he could do. Now, the team that he was normally working on had another guy called Lawrence, who actually seemed to have some similar gifting, but he somehow didn't have the same shine and wasn't quite as in demand or popular. He was a little bit in the background. But when the two of them arrived at this conference, Phil was running around doing all the jobs that everybody was asking him to do. And partway through, he noticed that Lawrence had been and visited every team member from the teams that they'd been on in the past year and had taken one-on-one time with those team members, seen where they were up to, and prayed with each of them. And the popular guy, the super gifted guy, ended up jealous of the guy who everybody dismissed as a little bit in the background, because he realized that he had deliberately taken time for intimate relationships. Just activity without intimacy will be hollow. Many a Christian worker's activity is the grave of his spiritual life. That's a quote that knocked me sideways as somebody who's been involved in Christian ministry. Sometimes, for people like John at the front, trying to prepare loads of stuff, doing all of that stuff can actually take him away from intimacy because his to-do list is so long. But our service, our activity, has to come out of a place of intimacy. Because ultimately, God says to us in the Psalms, be still and know that I am God. So when we're feeling overwhelmed, when it's just activity, perhaps that's the time we need to stop and to be at the feet of Jesus and to realize who he is again, that the world doesn't depend on us. Actually, it's held together by him. And we need to be at peace and to wait for his direction before we go back to activity. Let's get the musicians back up here. And as they're going to do that, I'm going to read some verses from Romans that may be a prayer as we close. So you can just listen, or you may want to pray these words. And they go like this from Romans 12. It's actually called the marks of a true Christian. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. And seek to show hospitality. But do it from a place of intimacy. Amen.